Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. 80 million people in the United States will be 65 or older within a few decades, compared with around 50 million today. And according to surveys conducted by the AARP, the big seniors group, the desire to grow old at home is almost universal. But the home health aid industry is not on track to meet the increasing demand. From lack of government funding to poor working conditions, the future of home health is in trouble and in dire need of change. So says E. Tammy Kim, my next guest, or so says the AARP, to be specific. My next guest is E. Tammy Kim, a freelance writer and a fellow at the Investigative Fund. And her latest piece was published in Bloomberg Businessweek and was reported in partnership with the Investigative Fund. It's called Americans Will Struggle to Grow Old at Home. Tammy, thanks so much for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so much, Brian.
So when we think of home health care, we have to think of two sides of it. There are the workers and there are the people in need of care. So let's start with those in need of care. What are the various reasons someone would need a home health aid?
Sure. So we're looking at two groups broadly. You mentioned elders. It's also the disabilities community. Most people would prefer to be in their familiar surroundings, to have home health aides who know what their specifications are, know what their preferences for food and for their sort of daily habits, showers, et cetera, would be. A lot of things that people are in nursing homes for or in hospitals for can actually be covered through new equipment and through well-trained aides.
So let's say you're 65 and over and you want to be assisted at home rather than go to a nursing home. How much of that will Medicare cover?
Medicare does not cover long-term care. It covers immediate hospitalization care at home, nursing services. But that's a great misconception. A lot of people talk about Medicare and Medicare for All. Well, a wonderful slogan and an important part of our infrastructure does not actually do long-term care. So most of the home care that we're talking about is Medicaid-funded. That means it's for people who are extremely poor or formerly middle-class people who, because of the costs of care in older age or because of disabilities, are no longer middle class and are covered by Medicaid.
And so some seniors who need that kind of home health, home aid of any kind, daily tasks, first exhaust their savings, then they apply for Medicaid when they are newly poor enough to receive it if they weren't earlier in their lives. And then how much Medicaid covers varies and varies tremendously state by state. And as some of our listeners certainly know, New York is one of the nation's largest long-term care markets and the only state whose Medicaid program covers around-the-clock help. So how would you describe New York in a national context in terms of what they provide through Medicaid? And if you know, specifically from our region, even to compare it to New Jersey and Connecticut?
Sure, thanks. So as you said, Medicaid in New York is quite generous. And in my view, and the reason that we did the investigation in New York is that we are having in New York sort of the thing that we all say we want. We have an infrastructure where we are devoting public health dollars to keep people at home instead of in institutional care. New Jersey and Connecticut are also pretty good, but they don't do the 24-hour care that is the subject of the piece. The reason that we were interested in that is because that's sort of the highest end of the need, obviously, and that would replace people who would be in nursing homes who sort of need that round-the-clock assistance. However, in our state, still, we are facing all of these crises, and with Medicaid-managed long-term care, the sort of insurance system, the way the money trickles down is extraordinarily complicated. We try to simplify it in the story, but the bottom line is there isn't enough money in the system, and the way it comes down to families is wholly inadequate.
For example?
So, for example, and the focus of the piece is we've been talking a lot about the consumer side. On the worker side, what we're seeing is on 24-hour shifts, only 13 of those hours are typically paid. So in the law, in the regulations, there is an 11-hour assumption, a deduction. The assumption is that you're sleeping and eating all of those hours, which is kind of a preposterous claim given that these are the most needy people who are being awarded 24-hour care. And so already in our system, yes, we provide 24-hour care. However, that's essentially deducted by 50%.
And so does Medicaid also provide multiple people in shifts equaling 24-hour care if it's determined that a particular patient needs more active care around the clock?
Yeah, there are theoretically two forms of 24-hour care. One is the one that we just mentioned, where you have one worker for the whole 24 hours, but 11 of those hours are not paid. And then there's something called split shift, and this is for the highest need patients, and this is when they would have two workers in consecutive shifts of 12 hours each. So you have one worker for 12 hours and one worker for the next 12 hours. That is exceedingly rare these days. It's obviously extraordinarily costly. And really the only way people have been getting it is by commencing legal proceedings to get it, to say, hey, it's actually not fair that a worker wouldn't only be paid for half of the time. I need somebody to be available even at night when I need to get up for toileting, it might need some sort of assistance. What if I fall out of bed? All of these things are major concerns.
So listeners, we're opening our phones on this. Are you or have you been a home health aide? We would love to hear the stories of the pay and working conditions of people who've worked in this growing field. Have you gone through a similar situation to what Tammy was just describing, where you feel forced to work extra hours without proper pay? Tell us your story of being a home healthcare worker, good, bad, mixed, whatever. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And we'll open it up in a little bit for people who need care or whose loved ones need care. But we'd also love to hear from some of those providers who are now or have been home health aides. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. For Tammy Kim, freelance writer and fellow at the Investigative Fund, who's written about this in Bloomberg Business Week. In fact, why don't you tell us the story of the particular home healthcare worker who you profiled, named Valya?
Sure. Valya is a Ukrainian immigrant, and she's been doing home health aid work since the early 1990s, so she's quite a veteran. Recently, she's found that all she's been assigned through her agency are these 24-hour shifts, and they're extremely exhausting for her. She is essentially only able to work a 48-hour shift, so she does two 24s in a row, and at the end of that, she's basically too exhausted to take on other shifts. What she's seen in her agency is a shift where there used to be availability for, say, doing 5 days of 10-hour shifts a day, sort of normal working schedule. But about 5-10 years ago, she started seeing, oh, there's really only the option to do a 3-hour shift or to do these 24-hour shifts. So she's had to take the 24-hour shifts. She's very passionate about serving her clients, but it's absolutely exhausting, and she's only paid for 26 hours of those 48 that she works.
And how exceptional or typical is Valya's story?
There are now dozens of class action lawsuits over this issue of uncompensated nights. Valya had been in one such case. That case has really gone nowhere. A couple of other cases have fared a bit better. But what this tells us, and I've met dozens of other home health aides who are on these 24-hour shifts, that this is a proliferating issue. It's also an emblematic one. It's not just the people working 24-hour shifts who are underpaid or not paid for hours they've worked. There is a legacy in home health care for this sort of thing where it's looked at as a domestic and woman's labor. Oh, this is charity. Oh, can't you just stay a few more hours? I need you here. And so this is something that's now built into the system.
What percentage of home health aides are women?
It's really difficult to know. Some estimates say that as high as 70 or 80% are women, a lot of women of color, a lot of immigrants in this industry. And home health aides, that's one sort of domestic work. Of course, there are lots of other folks who may not have certification who are working in gray market home care, or domestic workers, nannies who do both child care and elder care. There's all sorts of different people involved in this industry.
How does the gender and ethnic makeup of the home health aide workforce inform the story? You know, you can always imagine the alternative universe and say, if this was all white men doing this, they'd be paid a living wage, a family wage. So how do gender and ethnic background inform this story?
Well, one thing that's quite clear is that during the New Deal, when the minimum wage and overtime and other labor laws were legislated, there was an explicit exclusion of domestic workers and agricultural workers. And a lot of historians and people who read the legislative records say, well, that's clearly an outgrowth of slave labor, so people in the field, people in the homes. And we've seen that exclusion continue, so that it's only in 2015, in fact, that a lot of home health companions, called people who are sitting with elders, caring for elders, but providing quote-unquote non-medical tasks, were included under the minimum wage and overtime rules. So this is both, we see a historical connection in terms of race and immigration status that way under the laws, and then sort of more of like a sociological or atmospheric thing where we think about domestic workers in just a very different way. You would never imagine being, my dad was a factory worker, imagine a factory worker working a 24-hour shift and only being paid for 13 of those hours. It's inconceivable.
Let's take a phone call. Here's Sandra in Queens. Sandra, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Yeah, I'm a social worker for a home care agency, and I just wanted to put the bug in the community's ear that there are financial tools that allow people who have a little higher income to become eligible for Medicaid. The most known tool is called the Pooled Trust, P-O-O-L-D-E-D, and people should Google it if they have a loved one who's in need of Medicaid. When you could ask your doctor to have home care, and they can send a social worker in who can share with you all these options to make sure that the person has Medicaid, as well as cost-effective privately hired aides. So, and your family member can also get paid to take care of your loved one. So people need to know all the options available.
Thank you very much, Sandra. Let's go to, can I go to line 7? Is she ready? Maybe not. Let's try a patient. Sharifa in Brooklyn, who gets 24-hour home care. Is that right, Sharifa? Hi, you're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Yes, that is correct. I receive 24 hours split shift, 12-12.
And
I receive it from Independence Care System, which is actually the only MLCC plan in New York City that offers members, you know, with 24-hour care.
Is it working for you?
It is working for me because thanks to ICS, I'm able to work with two jobs. I have great home attendants who's actually two of them been with me 16 years, one of them, and another one 11 years. And if that happens, because there's a rumor going around that ICS might be closed because they provide such high services. And if I lose these services, my workers would also lose their job.
So you feel in solidarity with your workers, not like there's a push and pull, that your interest, you know, pulls at their interest.
Correct.
Thank you so much for chiming in. Lori and Patterson, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lori.
Yes, hi. It's so nice to talk to you, and we all love your program.
Thank you.
This is a very timely topic. I was formerly a nursing home administrator for many years, and after I did that, I went into a certified nurse's aide because I got more satisfaction from working directly with geriatrics.
Mm-hmm.
I went in 2015. I was calling the screener, and I was telling her I made $30,000. I'm a single parent for a whole year of full-time work of working through a very large agency who I still work for. Good agency. Mm-hmm. Okay. 2016, the last 2 years, I went in private home health. I would get an hourly of an average of $11 or $12 through this large agency.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. No breaks, no meals. Sometimes you were up during the night if you did an overnight shift. All routine work, very, very hard work, plus housekeeping duties, not just personal care for the people. Okay. When I went into my own home health, private home health, which I got through word of mouth, now I make $25 an hour. So this is the big difference between people that can pay, and there are many people who can,
mm-hmm.
but of course there are many people who can't.
Right.
And the people who can't are getting the people who are working for them who have these credentials, but it's a totally dual system, totally night and day.
So, Lori, are you saying in part that the Medicaid payment, those who get it through Medicaid, that payment system is, you know, unconscionably low, and it's only the...
Absolutely.
Yes,
absolutely.
It's the Medicaid.
And every time I would sit at an agency meeting, and like I said, it's a very good agency, I would say we need to unionize because the people have absolutely no power. Absolutely. What other job do you have for 10, 12 hours you never get a break, or you're up all night, or whatever it is? And also, somebody's not mentioning, you never get paid overtime for a holiday. Never. You never get paid a sick. It's absolutely unheard of.
Have you ever been in a situation where a client asks you, like our guest was describing before, oh, just stay a few more hours, I really need you, even though you weren't going to get paid?
Well, the thing is, you would always get paid. I never worked for the agency or private where you wouldn't get paid for the time. Now, what I will say is some people will take advantage of the aide and ask them to do things that are unrelated to what their care list is. Say somebody will have you go out and rake leaves in their yard, okay? That has nothing to do with what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
That kind of thing does happen, and unless you just put your foot down.
Right.
But a lot of people are very nice, and they do these things.
Lori, thank you so much for your call. We really appreciate your story. So Tammy, she raises such a fundamental issue here, I think, which is the sort of two-pronged pay scale. One, if you're working outside the Medicaid system for somebody who's paying you privately, maybe somebody of greater means, and versus those who are working within the Medicaid system who get paid so little. Your article says an average of $22,000 a year.
Right. So the vast majority of home health is provided through Medicaid. So we need to fix that system. Yes, there is a private care market, and yes, you can earn higher wages there, although I've met a lot of workers who earn very low wages there too, where people are essentially kind of offering them just above the Medicaid rate. But the thing is, in New York, and I think, I guess, Sharifa and a couple other of the callers were sort of alluding to this, it's coming down, those Medicaid dollars are now coming down through these managed long-term care companies, which is just private insurance companies. And there's been a decision, a policy decision by our state and other states to say, we're going to try to make this as economical as possible. But in so doing, the rates that are set for these workers are just too low for them to provide adequate care, and it's harmful to the patients as well.
Well, do you, based on your research, or maybe you don't want to go there one way or another, recommend long-term care insurance? Some seniors take it out, or some people, I don't know how young, as sort of a preventive measure so you can get in the system, people start buying long-term care insurance with the idea, I guess, that if you need it someday, then it's not going to bankrupt you, because of course it's so expensive. If you know, you don't want to, if you're not poor enough to require Medicaid, you don't want to become poor enough to be eligible for Medicaid, and you don't want to bankrupt yourself through having to pay for 24-hour care if you find yourself in that physical shape. So some people do get long-term care insurance, and then the aides are provided, as in Sharifa's case, by the agencies who are contracted with those insurance companies. Do you see that as a good option? Do you see that as a ripoff? Do you take a stand on that?
It is an option. It doesn't work for everybody. There are a lot of limitations there. It's extremely costly. When I say limitations, there are limitations on the amount and the duration and the kinds of services that can be covered. And so, for instance, I knew a family and did an interview with them who have long-term care insurance, and they used it. They were almost at the edge of the benefit limit when the patient passed away. And so it did cover them, but had he lived a few years longer, or 5 or 10 years longer, they would have been having to pay out of pocket at that point.
So like any insurance, before you start paying your premiums, know what's actually covered or not covered.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think because it's not, it hasn't been as popular as the long-term care insurers have hoped, it's just getting more and more costly, and some of the companies haven't done so well. And so it's also a bit of an unreliable plan at this point.
Leslie in New Haven, you're on WNYC. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, thank you very much. You clearly have a very experienced speaker there. I would like to make a couple of corrections. One is that Medicare does indeed pay for this sort of care when there is also skilled care involved. So if you come home from the hospital and you need a nurse to come by, Medicare will certainly provide a certain number of hours of what they also call unskilled care in assistance. The second is that, correct?
Yes. Sorry, I tried to account for that in the medical care under Medicare, but please go ahead.
Yep. Number two, Connecticut pays for 24-hour care, as well as New York, for those who are listening. And the third thing is, you referred to, I believe, 2014, when finally, people who did 24-hour care, which is also referred to as live-in care, a rather kinder word, were to be compensated at time and a half for over 40 hours. Well, I hope that there are some families who will call in for this also who have live-in care. What this has done, if you have a live-in caregiver looking after someone who has Alzheimer's or is unsteady on their feet and they cannot be left alone, then you have someone living in. What this has done is you get to 40 hours very, very quickly. So either that hike in costs has driven families out of being able to provide live-in care for their loved ones and put them into nursing homes, which is exactly where they didn't want to belong. It has also driven the demand for caregivers totally underground. So the only other option that the families have now is to hire people through Craigslist. Those people are not background checked. The people do not receive workers' compensation or other things that an agency will provide for them. So it's a lose-lose situation.
What do you see as a solution, Leslie?
I think that they need to re-examine the issue of 40 hours of care and what they consider when care is being delivered. Any of you who have sat with people who are receiving 24-hour care will tell you that those people do not work 24 hours a day. They mostly don't work 14 hours a day. A lot they're being paid for by being present, and there is some value to that. I don't deny that. But that issue has got to be reexamined.
Leslie, I'm going to leave it there. And we're almost out of time. Why don't you go ahead and respond to her, and then I want to ask you a closing question about costs, because it sounds like with the growing elderly population and with the needs on both sides to compensate home health aides more fairly and also with, you know, to provide the maximum possible in-home health service to a growing elderly population so people don't have to go to nursing homes. I mean, the total cost to the nation could be astronomical. But you wanted to respond to something specifically that Leslie said first?
Sure, yeah. Thanks to Leslie for her comment. I'll check my fact on Connecticut. But in regards to the overtime, I don't think that that's true for all home health aides, that they could be on shift for 24 hours and only do work for, you know, 12 or 14 of those hours. I think it just depends vastly. And also under labor law, it's just not the case that if you are there and you are on call, you do not need to be paid. And so I think the regularization of this work in 2015 is entirely appropriate. Yes, there are costs to families, and that's part of what we need to work through the system for. I'm not sure that care has been driven underground exclusively. There's an above-ground background checked market on care.com, for instance, that's flourishing. And of course, I just want to state again that Medicaid still is the primary market that we're discussing, and so that needs to be fixed first and foremost. With regard to the costs, Brian, I mean, I think one of the things we discuss in the article is Medicare and Medicaid right now in the senior care system is they are quite separate. And one of the solutions that has been proposed and a lot of people are looking at, and New York has a small pilot project for, is integrating Medicare and Medicaid and trying to make better sort of coordinate these so that you could have Medicare and Medicaid sort of jointly cover some of the long-term care. That would be a big help. We do still need to increase the funding for Medicaid and Medicare. That's not a very popular solution, but it is a real one. And I think I was very encouraged by under the, you know, while the ACA has been so controversial and being attacked in the legislature, that so many people from the senior rights and disability rights community were saying, don't destroy my Medicaid. This is very important to me. This is not just a poor people's issue. This is a middle class issue. This is an American issue. And as the senior population explodes, we're just going to have to figure out new ways to make the system properly funded.
E. Tammy Kim, a freelance writer and fellow at the Investigative Fund, and her latest piece was published in Bloomberg Business Week, reported in partnership with the Investigative Fund, called Americans Will Struggle to Grow Old at Home. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.